Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Why don't you come on around this squeaky old gate with me and let's get behind the house and into the yard and see what we have for you today as we walk into this beautiful, beautiful irrigated lot here on the urban farm. We find Mr. Greg Peterson. 2 days before Christmas, what did Gary say? Christmas Eve squared. What are you jarring and canning and wrapping for your Christmas gift last minute presents here?
Oh my gosh. So last week was my sweetie Heidi's office party, and they always have a gift exchange. So I always take a big bag of citrus, and it's one of those gift steal things, you know, where they can steal the gift from somebody. And my bag of citrus is always a winner. It always gets stole the most times, and
it gets passed around so much it's half juiced by the time the last person
exactly.
gets it.
Exactly.
Wonderful. I have a dream that our pecan trees will be that one day.
We have
four.
Yes.
And
yes.
Two years ago, we got one.
One pecan?
One pecan.
Oh, my gosh.
And which was actually a surprise because they said don't expect anything for 7 years, and this was year two.
Oh, wow. Cool.
Year three, nothing.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I got 26.
Nice.
So I have about another 10 years. I'll have enough pecans for those party giveaways to sack up fresh from the Whitman plantation.
Well, if I remember correctly, you have a lot of pecan trees.
I have five.
Okay, that's a lot. Because they'll get to be 60 feet tall and you know, produce.
We're just waiting on it.
Yeah,
we're
exactly.
waiting on it. One slow year at a time. So we're excited. They'll do a lot more than just the pecans. They're on the north side of the property.
Oh.
And we've kind of got a little irrigated spot, and it's where the cars come in, and we'll have a little tree fort out there. We got big plans for a nice little irrigated shade little pecan orchard.
Sweet. So. Sweet.
But we're not there yet.
You know what? The best time to plant a tree. I think this is an old proverb from somewhere. The best time to plant a tree
25 years ago.
Or today.
Get it moving. And what are we going to get moving today?
So the really cool thing about Arizona is we can pretty much grow 12 months a year. So we can have, in Phoenix, there's food every day in my yard. It's an odd day when we don't pick something and eat it. And
That's a vacation day. You're not home.
Exactly. Exactly. Although when we go on vacation, we pack our chest full of our ice chest full of all kinds of goodies from the urban farm. So we actually take stuff with us. So
excellent.
There you go. And there's the steps to starting a garden. It's not just go put some dirt out and plant some seeds. You've got to do some work beforehand. You've got to do some thought process to make sure that you're heading the right direction. Because there's nothing that's going to stop your garden quicker than putting it on the north side of a house. It's never going to get any sunlight, and your stuff's just not going to grow. So you have to start thinking through these things so that you don't hit any of the pitfalls that will, you know, screech your garden project to a halt.
What may seem like, hey, this is a perfect shade spot, and I can have my garden in the shade so I'm not out in the blistering sun, may not be the best plan for your plants if you want a good crop.
Right. Right. And, you know, really that's so in permaculture, I was going to say, really, that's the first step is to look at the sun. But in permaculture, what we do is we observe. You go spend time in your space. In fact, often I will tell people to spend a year observing their space to make sure that they know what's happening in the space. So if you get a really good monsoon rain, where does the water go? What are you going to do with it? Perfect example is about 10 years ago, the people across the street from me have a west-facing front of their house, and they had two ancient grapefruit trees in their front yard, and the house sold, the new owners were there, and in week one, they were cutting down these 40-foot-tall grapefruit trees.
Mm.
This was their western shade on their house. They didn't live in the house long enough to know the value of those trees. And you do that by observing. And in permaculture, we call that a class one error. So you don't want to make any class one errors. Now, planting something in a pot or starting a small garden, that's not what I'm talking about. But when you're going to do major stuff in your yard, spend a year observing. Pay attention to the seasons and the shadows. We're going to talk more about that in a little while. The shadows and everything that's going on in the space so you know what is happening there.
If you're looking to do your own type of urban farm or What's that other word? Agriscaping? Where...
Yeah, or just your garden, you know, just putting in a garden, you know, putting a 5x5 box in or a 4x5 box in. You really need to pay attention to these following next 3 or 4 points that we're going to make.
And it's important to set yourself up for success. There's a lot of people that, you know, there's nothing wrong with trial by error or learning by failure. Do that more than I should. Sometimes I should have just listened instead of trying myself. But if I do it and I fail, I'm more likely to remember it and experience it than just hearing it secondhand. And you know, even if I do it, I'm curious just to try, just to see. You know, I know this isn't supposed to work by theory, but I just got to know. Well, being able to have some success and some wins along the way will keep you from getting burnt out.
Exactly. People come to my tours all the time, and there's a lot going on at the urban farm. I've lived there for 28 years. I've been studying permaculture for 26 of those 28 years and installing permaculture nature-style projects in the place that kind of propel themselves forward. So when somebody comes to a tour at the urban farm, there's so much going on. I tell them not to get overwhelmed. And then I tell them, pick one thing. If you see one thing that's going on in the yard, pick that and do that. Be successful at that, and then move to the next one. That way you're not overwhelming yourself. Because what happens when we get overwhelmed? We get overwhelmed, we shut down, game over. We stop playing. And that's the last thing I want, is for people to stop playing. So you just, you know, thinking.
And often it's right when they're about to get their first great harvest or the first great, you know, you're right on the threshold is usually where people don't see that they just, they're almost to the ridge and they're on the way down on the other side, but they can't bring themselves to get to that saddle, get to the peak.
There you go. There you go. So really the first thing you need to know is, where's the sun at? So you know that the sun is in different places in the sky throughout the year. On December 21st, which, you know, we just passed. So on December 21st, the sun's the lowest in the sky. So that means all of our shadows are going to be really long. And it's farthest south on December 21st. On June 21st, it's farthest north. And when I say north, it's really straight up in the sky. So setting your smartphone for December, well, go out and look today at noon.
2 days off the 21st. It's not a huge difference.
You're fine. And then June 21st, and kind of get an idea of where those shadows are at and how long they are. If you're gardening on a northern exposure, a north side of a structure, that's the worst place to garden, because that's going to only get sun in the harshest time of the year. So paying attention to that. If I was going to put something on the north side of a structure, I'd want to know on December 21st how long the shadow is, and then I would push my garden out past that shadow on December 21st, 22nd, 23rd. You know, go out and do that today.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing where the sun is at is a really, really important piece of this puzzle. The next thing is, go ahead.
Well, that also tells you what you may be planting as well. Some of those may do better in a little bit of a shade time, or depending on where that you know, I was made the analogy of, you know, planting under a shade tree. Well, if you're just not, maybe you're a snowbird or you have a second residence in the summer and you're not planting in the summertime. So underneath that shade tree might work in the wintertime, because if it's far south, it's still getting that light coming in. Whereas in the summertime, you're not out there, it doesn't matter.
Are you reading my notes?
You know, I have them.
That's the next thing we're going to talk about. And we call those microclimates.
Microclimates, okay.
Microclimates. You ever been hiking? You go hiking and you go down into a ravine and it gets 15 degrees cooler.
Oh,
or if you're a scuba diver.
I can relate to the hiking, not the scuba diving.
In the scuba diving, they're called thermoclines. You're swimming along and all of a sudden it's 15 degrees cooler. So in our yards... we call those microclimates. And what makes a warmer, what do you think makes a warmer microclimate?
Oh, south, south and west faces.
South and west facing, concrete, so a block wall, a driveway, a street. These are all things that warm up our spaces. Now, that could be a great thing in the wintertime, and it could be a great thing in the summertime, maybe, but you got to go figure that out. I had, oh, and you mentioned Western exposure. I did the garden for the Calico Cow on Central for probably a decade when they were there at Dunlap and Central. And they had a northwestern facing concrete back patio.
Okay.
And the garden in there was 4 feet wide and 60 feet long.
Cool.
And so it was in a really warm microclimate because of all the concrete, because of the western exposure. What I learned very quickly in that space was that I could do nothing from May 1st to about September 30th. But the rest of the year, we grew everything. So it was one of those warmer microclimates in the winter that we took advantage of. So really identifying your microclimates so that you can best plant what needs to be planted in that space, that's one of your first tasks.
And when you're looking at microclimates and mm-hmm. you're talking about those different things, are there, as a homeowner, you know, we mentioned the block walls, we mentioned the north, you know, the facing direction. Mm-hmm. What about tree canopies? What about other bushes and shrubs? I mean, what about lawns?
Yeah, all of that stuff. All of that stuff provides a cooler microclimate. In fact, often I will tell people on the west side of your property, on the west side of your garden, plant shade.
And that's what we tell everybody.
Yeah.
You mean you do it for different purposes for the urban farming aspect, mm-hmm. but for the builder aspect.
Oh my gosh, it's
and
huge.
Shading your home.
Yep.
You know, it's both shade, and we both like it on the west side for two different reasons, but yeah. Shade's priceless out here.
Yeah. Well, and that's really the big reason I tell people to plant on the west side is to cool your house.